is to enable us to audit CPD records. And finally, may I also ask you to turn off your mobile phones and BlackBerries, I'll do mine in a minute, as both interfere with the sound system, and it's not sufficient to mute the ringing tone, your phone or BlackBerry will still try and talk to its base, and this is picked up by the equipment. That is the end of the notices, and I think we've just about got all the audience in the hall now. The subject of tonight's meeting is a discussion of the CMI self-administered pension schemes, or SAPS, mortality tables. And I'd like to invite Andrew Gashes to deliver his presentation on the CMI SAPS graduation consultation paper, working paper 32. Andrew. Sorry, actually, it's not Andrew.
Brian.
It's Brian, right.
Yeah.
Brian Wilson is going to do it.
Whoops. Sorry, I'm making too much of this. Where do we go? Other way. No, I was told it was easy. Well, somebody gets that right. President, ladies and gentlemen, the order of play this evening is that I'll be giving a few opening comments, and then Andrew will remind you of some of the pertinent points in the graduation consultation document, working paper 32, and questions that the CMI SAPS Mortality Committee is asking for responses on. Following this, Nigel will give a brief outline of further work that the CMI SAPS Mortality Committee will be carrying out later in 2008. There are a couple of comments that I want to make to head off areas of discussion that I do not think would be profitable. Firstly, I've already seen some criticism in the press that the discussion document does not consider what rates of mortality improvement may be appropriate for use with the new tables under consideration. It's never been the intention that the graduation work would look at future rates of improvement. There's been much discussion of that issue in recent years, and I'm sure it will be an ongoing discussion. However, it's the view of the committee at this point that our data set, though large, does not have a sufficiently long history to be a suitable basis from which to obtain future projections. Part of the work that Nigel will be talking about will be an examination of trends within the data set, but not extrapolations from it. The committee is also aware of the heterogeneity of the data, with the vast majority of schemes only present for one three-year period in the 6 years covered by the data set. We can and will be looking at mortality of different subsets of the data set. More of this later, but we didn't think that producing 12 times the number of graduations that we have would make for greater usefulness of the graduations. Reducing from an initial 40 to the current 20 has been hard enough work. I've been asked to give some comments on how the committee would envisage the SAPS tables being used once finalised. I see the advantages of having the tables as threefold. Firstly, they are more up-to-date than any other set of tables, so more credible. Secondly, they'll be of significant advantage where scheme data is large enough to give a credible experience and the actuary or trustees are looking for the best fit tables. The shape of the SAPS tables is rather different from the 00 series tables, in that they tend to be relatively heavier at older ages in retirement compared to younger ages in retirement. This is ignoring proposed changes above age 95. Some schemes are splitting members into high and low paid for valuation purposes, and the SAPS tables give the flexibility to choose appropriate tables for different sections of the pensioner population and also of the pre-retirement population. Thirdly, For schemes that are not large enough for a credible experience, they give flexibility to choose normal, light or heavy mortality according to the type of employment. It may be argued that the 00 tables more accurately reflect the experience of small schemes, as only large schemes form the data set that we've analysed. However, in producing light tables, we've provided actuaries advising schemes with a small white-collar only workforce with alternative tables that may more closely reflect that type of scheme. I'd like at this point to thank John Elam, who was a member of the working party that produced the 00 series of tables, for valued help in these tables, and also David Wilkie, a member of the CMI technical working party, and the CMI secretariat, for their input to date, with the promise of more to follow. Finally, I'd like to point out one error in working paper. Figure 46 on page 38 is incorrect, as it compares female pensioner amounts light with PCLF00 and not female pensioner lives as stated. The correct table is available from the CMI part of the profession's website. This highlights, inadvertently, one of the questions that we have asked. Does anyone have a better suggestion for heavy and light, as the use of L is potentially ambiguous and could lead to mistakes, and to which trap the committee itself has unfortunately fallen.
Okay, I will start by providing a brief recap of the work to date of the CMI Mortality Committee. Is that better?
Is the microphone's on? Is that better? Great. I will start again by providing a brief recap of the work to date by the CMI SAPS Mortality Committee. Data has been collected since January 2003, and CMI Working Papers 4, 9, 17, and 29 contain summaries and/or analysis of the underlying data up to various dates. Working Paper 31, which was published at the same time as these proposed graduations, which are covered in Working Paper 32, contains a summary of the data underlying these graduations. Any feedback on this working paper is very welcome, particularly in response to those questions directly raised, and should be sent to Simon Spencer at the CMI or emailed to newtables@cmib.org.uk by 29th of February. The size of the dataset underlying the proposed graduations is shown graphically in this slide. The dataset is now large, with around 200,000 deaths for males and 150,000 deaths for females. This is around three times the size of the dataset underlying the 00 series pensioners tables. It is worth being clear how the SAPS dataset is subdivided. Some schemes are able to differentiate between pensioners who have retired in normal health and ill health, and this provides the normal and ill health categories of data. On the other hand, some schemes cannot differentiate between normal and ill health retirements once they have occurred, and data from such schemes is classified as combined. Data for dependents forms the fourth category we have used, and we have not used data for unknown members, i.e. those who cannot be divided accurately between pensioners and dependents. This next slide illustrates the numbers of deaths subdivided by year and highlights a key difference between the collection methods for the Life Office 00 series and the SAPS data. The former collects data for each calendar year after the end of that year. Hence, the 00 series was based on four calendar years with essentially full data. In contrast, the SAPS study collects data from scheme actuaries when available, which typically means that data arrives in three-year chunks as part of the triennial valuation process. As a result, we do not receive full data for any given calendar year until at least 3 years after the end of that year. This results in the pattern of data you see, with most data for 2002 and 2003, and progressively less data for subsequent years. As Brian has already mentioned, there were a large number of possible tables that were considered, including lives and amounts variants, tables for males and females, four types of data, the first being pensioners, including normal health, ill health, and combined, the second, normal health pensioners, ill health pensioners, and finally, dependents. In addition, as shown in the second column, we have three variants based on pension size. The first containing all pension sizes, the second containing broadly those lives with the top 25% of pensions by size, which we have termed light due to the lighter resulting mortality, and third, the bottom 75% of pensions by size, termed heavy. These were reduced to the 20 tables highlighted on the slide following preliminary inquiries and consideration of the results. There may still be too many combinations. The red tables denote those where we have specifically questioned the need for them in the working paper. And working paper 32 sets out four questions relating to the range of tables. Firstly, we ask for feedback on abbreviations for light and heavy. It would be possible to graduate the light tables based on the top 12.5% of data rather than the top 25% as has currently been done, and feedback has been requested as to whether this should be done, and a further round of consultation embarked on. We would also welcome feedback on more generally whether any specific table should be dropped to reduce the number of tables, and finally on the proposed names illustrated for the tables. The data for each proposed table was first graduated across the central range of ages where it was felt that there was sufficient data to do so. And this range varies for the different types of tables. The graduation fitted a Gompertz-Macon formula with parameters of order R and S to the data. And this is the approach which was adopted for the 00 series tables. Further details of this approach can be found in Forfar, McCutcheon and Wilkie 1988. The tables were then extended at high and low ages, which I will describe on the following slides. There were some anomalies between tables. For example, the mu x's for normal retirements were at some ages higher than those for all pensioners, which is not what we would expect in general. The method for removing such anomalies is set out in the working paper. Finally, the mu x's were then converted to q x's, using the same approach as for the 00 series. This slide illustrates the method of extending the graduation to high ages. In each case, the graduated values have been used up to age 95. Mu at age 121 has been set to 999, i.e. a sufficiently high force of mortality, so that Q at 120 would equal 1. Mu between 105 and 120 was then set so that the resulting QX would equal 0.45 for males and 0.4 for females. This is an approach that we have based on recent work published by the ONS on population data in England and Wales at high ages, and there is a reference in the working paper to that work. Between 95 and 105, blended values are used that match the mu x at age 95 and at 105. And again, the blending approach is set out in the working paper. This overall approach is somewhat similar to that used for the 00 series. However, a key difference is that in the 00 series, the values were blended to a mu x of 1 at 120, whereas we have blended to age 105 as described. However, the expectations of life and annuities at 5% interest using the approach we have adopted are within 0.05% of those under the 00 series approach at all ages up to age 80. We have, however, asked for comments on the proposal for for a proposed method for extending the tables at high ages. The extensions to low ages are perhaps more complex, and this table sets out a summary. Considering each data type in turn, the pensioner data was graduated over the age range 55 to 95, and the graduation is then extended down to age 50 only. If it were extended to cover pensioners at younger ages, younger than 50, these would be ill health cases, and the resulting mortality curve would be U-shaped, and we have not taken this approach. In view of the small extension, the graduation formula obtained has been used at all ages from 50 upwards. Moving on to normal health pensioners, which were also graduated over the range 55 to 95, we noted that the data provided included some normal health retirement at below age 50, suggesting some element of misclassification. And any misclassification is unlikely to be restricted only to that youngest age group. For that reason, we have had some doubts over the data up to age 60 and used graduated values only between ages 60 and 95. These normal tables have then been extended down to age 20 by adopting a blend of various 00 series assured lives tables such that the value of the extension matches the mu at age 60 from the graduation. The ill health pensioners were graduated over the range 35 to 95. The graduation formula was slightly U-shaped in that there was a minimum value for mu-x at age 41 for males and 42 for females, and they were extended down to age 20 simply by continuing that minimum value of mu-x to the younger ages. The dependents, finally, were graduated over ages 45 to 95 and extended to age 20, where they were set, perhaps somewhat arbitrarily, to match the assured lives smoker, non-smoker, and the average of those two for the widow's heavy, light, and all table, respectively. The extension also sought to match the graduated value at age 45 and the slope of the curve at age 45, and is fitted using a Gompertz-Macon formula of order 03. Now, having described the approach that we have taken, we do recognise that alternatives are possible. For example, it would be possible to graduate the all pensioners data down to age 20 if it was accepted that a U-shaped curve was appropriate and would be useful for practitioners. Such a table may then be usable for an all pension evaluation where ill health was not differentiated. Similarly, the normal health tables could be curtailed at age 50 and then used in conjunction with the ill health tables to form a pair of tables to be used where ill health was not differentiated. Now, given the range of alternatives possible for these extensions to low ages, there are several questions in the working paper where we have sought feedback. In particular, we have asked which tables practitioners would desire to be extended down to age 20, and indeed whether age 20 is the right age to extend tables down to, should it be perhaps 16 or 17. We have asked whether the all pensioner table should stop at age 50 or be extended also, and we have asked more generally for feedback on whether the rates and or the methods chosen for extending to younger ages are the most suitable. The committee was in general satisfied with the fit of graduations over the range where we graduated the data, and figures 1 to 20 in working paper 32 demonstrate the results of this. This particular example, I believe, is figure 1. It shows a good fit of the graduated curve in black over the range 55 to 95, and that is shown compared to the crude rates of mu in blue and what are termed high and low gates in red and green, showing the 2.5 and 97.5 percentiles at each age. And there is a similar graphical representation in the working paper for each of the tables. Moving on in the working paper, figures 21 to 29 demonstrate the rationale for retaining or not retaining certain tables, and I will briefly outline a few of these. So figure 21 compares for males, all pensioners and normal health pensioners on an amount and a lives basis. The committee concluded that probably only one lives table would be necessary, and we have retained, for the purpose of the consultation, the all pensioners table. On an amounts basis, we have retained both the all pensioners table and the normal pensioners table. Figure 23 compares the male all pensioner amounts tables, the heavy, all and light graduations. And the committee concluded that all should be retained due to the distinct differences. However, we have queried whether it is necessary to retain all three if the male normal health pensioner tables are also split between heavy, all and light. Figure 26 compares females for normal health, showing the heavy, all and light graduations. It can be noted that the differences are less than for males. However, again, for the purpose of the consultation, all have been retained. And finally, for widows, there is a bigger distinction between the heavy, light and all graduations than for the other female graduations. And all three have been retained. The high and low age adjustments are demonstrated in figures 30 to 41 of the working paper, and I'll briefly review the effect of the low age adjustments described for two of the tables. So figure 31 demonstrates the difficulty of extending the male all pensioner table so that it is applicable for all pensioners at any age. Below age 50, such a table would need to reflect ill health retirements only, which have significantly higher rates of mortality. It would therefore be necessary either to have a discontinuity at some age between 50 and 60, or to blend the tables, say, from age 50 to 65, resulting in a U-shaped curve. The appropriate approach and the appropriate blend would presumably vary, possibly significantly, from scheme to scheme. The committee is therefore minded to graduate the pensioners table from age 50 only. The same issue occurs as shown for females, as shown in figure 36. Figure 37 demonstrates the extension to young ages of the male ill health amounts tables. And as you can see, the minimum value of the graduated mu x at age, in this case 41, has been continued to lower ages, and the same approach has been taken for females. We now move on to some observations on the proposed tables. And a key feature throughout the SAP studies has been that heavier mortality experience has been observed than the corresponding Life Office pensioner studies. So the following three charts show a comparison of the SAP's light tables in red in each case, for those of you with good eyesight, and the comparative 00 series table in green. The 00 series table has been projected to 2003, so it is comparable in terms of the calendar year using medium cohort projections. Now, the choice for this comparison of using a medium cohort projection is entirely arbitrary, and it does not imply that that is a suitable projection for any particular purpose. We mentioned earlier that the light tables contain data relating to broadly the top 25% of pensions by size, and that an alternative would have been to use the top 12.5% of pensions by size, and the chart also shows the graduation resulting from taking this approach, which we have termed the top band, and that is shown in blue. Now, what the graph shows is that the proposed light pensioner table for males in red is heavier than the comparative 00 series table in green from ages 70 upwards, so for most of that range. The alternative top band graduation in blue is lighter than the comparative 00 series table up to age 80, but heavier thereafter. We have a similar analysis shown here for female pensioners. As expected, the top band graduation in blue is slightly lighter than the proposed light graduation in red. However, in this case, both the light and the alternative top band graduations are heavier across almost the whole range than the comparative 00 series table, which is shown in green at the bottom of the chart. Finally, we have a similar comparison of the position for widows, which is perhaps similar to that for male pensioners, in that the proposed light table for widows in red is heavier than the comparative 00 series table in green from ages 70 upwards. The alternative top band graduation is blue, is lighter than the comparative 00 series table up to age 75, but heavier thereafter. So in conclusion from these three slides, the proposed SAPS graduations, even the light tables, are in general heavier than comparative 00 series tables projected to 2003. Adopting top band rather than light tables would shift the position somewhat, but in many cases, the comparative 00 series tables would remain lighter. The final three slides I have to show you illustrate expectations of life at age 65, and further comparisons on annuities as well are available in Appendix B for working paper. The comparisons for male shown here demonstrate a difference of around 2.5 years between heavy and light pensioners, that's the first and third bars, with the alternative top pensioners, fourth bar, being around 0.5 year longer than the light pensioners. Expectations of life for the comparative 00 series table, the bottom bar, are between that for the proposed light and alternative top band pensioners. However, that pattern would vary by age. The expectation of life for normal health pensioners is around 0.1 years higher than that for all pensioners. And finally, the ill health expectation of life is noticeably shorter at around 3 years less than that for normal health. A similar comparison for females is shown here. Perhaps the key difference is that there are smaller differences by pension size, with a difference of just over 1 year between the heavy and light pensioners, the first and third bars from the top, with the alternative top band pensioners, the fourth bar, being 0.25 years longer. The expectations of life for the comparative 00 series table at the bottom bar exceed that for both the light and alternative top band pensioners. The expectation of life for normal health pensioners in green is around 0.1 years higher than that for the all pensioners in black. And again, the ill health expectation of life is noticeably shorter, that's around 2.5 years less than that for normal health. Finally, a slide showing a similar comparison for widows, which demonstrates significant differences by pension sizes, as for males, with a difference of around 2.5 years between the heavy and light pensioners, the first and third bars, with the alternative top band pensioners, the fourth bar, being almost 0.5 years longer. The expectation of life for the comparative 00 series table, the bottom bar, exceeds that for both the proposed and alternative top band pensioners. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Andrew. Now, Nigel is going to talk to us about the future.
Thank you, President. Work for 2008. The first thing we're hoping to do is analyse a lot more fresh data. When we published our last reports about a year or so ago, everybody thought we didn't need any more information, and we did, and we sent out a request for that data and said, could you possibly send it to us by the end of February 2007? The inevitable consequence was that the CMI Secretariat received a year's worth of data on the 27th of February. So we do want lots more data, and there are reasons for that, and we'll look at those in a moment. One of the things we will be doing in addition is looking at the evidence regarding patterns of improvement that we're seeing in the data that we have got. As Brian has mentioned before, we've got a relatively short span of data to be doing anything about projections. We can at least see what patterns are emerging in the data so far, and also we intend to do some work on industrial classifications. So the clustering of the data in the centre years is the problem that we have. That's why we would like a lot more data. When we see the next couple of slides, we'll remind ourselves how that clustering happens, and we would like more data so we can have a more reliable measure of the improvements that we've been seeing, because we have very few schemes who've actually submitted two lots of valuation data to us. There are a few, but relatively few. So we have a real problem in the exposed to risk, in that we've got particular years maybe heavily weighted towards particular schemes who happen to have submitted their data for that period, but not on a consistent basis. So please keep sending the information in. We really do want to look at it and carry out this further analysis, which we believe will be extremely useful. Got a couple of examples in a moment. Not on the website at the moment. The things we'll be looking at on improvements are extracts from the data that is already out there. We have not shown any form of breakdown by industrial classification, but we do intend to do some other stuff on that, and we'll show you a final slide on that. The data on the website is measured against 92 series short cohort. When the committee was set up about 4 or 5 years ago, it wasn't clear how long we were going to be around. We were looking at the analysis of an initial set of data, and if we found that the 92 series had been a sensible table for that, then we might have been able to pack up our bags and go home. But as it was, we found that there were more issues that we needed to look at. But we'd actually chosen at the beginning of that period the short cohort as the set of improvements, partly because in 2003 that was the target at which pensions actuaries were aiming, rather than any more of the more adventurous tables. So all the analysis has so far been done against the short cohort. Now, for back analysis, that's not too bad, because at least for the first half of the decade, the difference between short, medium and long cohort is very small, but clearly the short cohort is now running out of steam. I think for the future, I don't think I'm telling tales out of school if I mention that we think this is probably the last time we'll be using the short cohort, although, as Andrew has pointed out, this should not be regarded as any form of recommendation. Now, the analysis that we have got on the actual data. First of all, a reminder of the clustering of the data. There's a serious grouping of the data around 2002-03, but we have very little data in 2006 and 2005. It's reasonable, but we would like more. With the additional submissions of data, we're really rather hoping that these exposed to risk, these bars, will be much more even in height, so that we have some consistency of what we're looking at. So that is on the right-hand axis, the amount of pension cancelled by death. On the left-hand side, we've got the actuals to expecteds, and this is one of the advantages of using the 92 tables. They are a poor fit for the data, but you can see that at the youngest pensioner ages, 55 to 64, we've got an A of RE roughly of 175%, and it drops to 150 and then down to the 120s for the older ages. Now, the point about this analysis is that we are measuring the experience in particular calendar years against the 92 series projected to those calendar years. So if the short cohort was right for the rate of improvement, even though the absolute levels of the A over E are a bit out of step, we would expect those lines to be fairly horizontal, and they are. So the short, and by analogy, the medium and long cohorts, which are very little different, up to about 2005. It looks as though the data is supportive of something like the cohort effect, but it does not appear to be a great deal stronger than that, at least when you look at the all retirements category. The next slide, we look at the normal retirements category, and while the oldest age groups are still pretty much on the horizontal line there, we're finding that the at the more recent years, the younger pensioners do appear to have their mortality improving much faster than the cohort, because we're now finding the actual to expected is declining at these years. Now, the trouble is, of course, 2006, we have almost no data at all in this normal retirement category. And again, it's why we would like a lot more information to be able to check what's really going on here. Finally, an industrial analysis. We've subdivided this according to the FTSE classifications. And as you can see, for some of the data we have, some of the groups we have very large amounts of data. A few of the others we've got much less. We will certainly do comparisons of the experience by the industrial classifications. And where we have enough information, we think we're going to be able to do an analysis of the variation of the experience within schemes within particular industrial classifications. So we'll be going to look within classification and across classification as well. And we hope this will also be useful to scheme actuaries in forming their valuation bases. Now, that's the end of my part. We are now on to the discussion. We have a few pointers here which hopefully will remind people of the areas where we'd like feedback, but we very much look forward to receiving the contributions from the floor. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Nigel. So, as Nigel has said, the discussion is now open to the floor. First of all, I've got three people who've put their names down to speak, and those are Louise Pryor, Martin Clark, and David Wilkie. Can I ask how many other people might have an interest in speaking during the discussion? One? Two? Right, okay. Well, I don't think we're going to have to restrict the time for individual contributions in that case. And it would be quite helpful to have one or two more speakers, so perhaps you could be thinking about what you'd like to say. Also, if you would like to speak, can you please either wait until a microphone is brought to you before you make your contribution, or come up to the lectern here, and also state your name clearly before making your contribution, unless I've already done it for you. So can I invite Louise Pryor to make the first contribution?
Well, Nick's already said that I'm Louise Pryor. I welcome these two working papers and the proposals for published graduations of the SAPS experience, and would like to thank all those who've put so much work into them. Although much of the recent discussion about mortality rates has concentrated on assumptions about future improvements, assumptions about the current rates of mortality, or at least the rates for a specified date in the recent past, are an equally important component in the overall estimation of future rates. The starting point affects where you end up just as much as the direction in which you set off. In this context, the availability of up-to-date mortality rates for pensioners will be a valuable resource for actuaries and hence for the users of actuarial information. It's important that, as well as being up-to-date, the mortality rates are seen to be up-to-date. Working Paper 32 proposes a naming convention for the graduated tables and requests feedback on it. The proposed convention would use the year 2003 to identify the tables, as that's the central year of the experience on which they're based. This immediately makes it look as if the rates are already 5 years old. In conversations I've had with many non-actuaries about mortality tables, they have expressed some surprise that it takes the CMI so long to publish graduated tables, citing delays of up to 5 or 6 years, compared with, for example, Life Metrics, who published revised index values within a few weeks or months of the underlying data being published. The problem is that the time taken by the CMI appears much longer than it actually is. The 00 series tables were published in 2006, apparently a wait of 6 years. The SAP's 2003 tables will be published, if all goes well, in 2008, which looks like 5 years. But of course, it hasn't actually taken 5 or 6 years. These tables will be based on experience from the years 2000 to 2006, using data collected to the 30th of June 2007. The proposed graduations are thus being exposed for consultation within 7 months of the data becoming available, which is pretty good going. Using the year 2003 in the name, while accurately pinpointing the notional date to which the rates apply, presents a misleading impression as to how up-to-date the rates are. And in my view, this reflects badly on the CMI and on the actuarial profession. The only really non-negotiable requirement for the names of tables is that they are unique. Although it's nice if the names reflect the date, it's really an optional extra. Those who use the tables will, if they are competent, know what date the rates apply to. It doesn't need to be in the name. Instead, the table names should refer to the year of publication. The trustees and board members, who are in many cases responsible for the final decisions on the assumptions, can then be confident that they are using the most recent information that's available. Appearances can affect reality, and the profession will want the CMI to be seen to be operating on the same timescale as the rest of the world. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Louise. David Wilkie.
My name's David Wilkie. Is there a button here so you can tell me when I go on too long?
No.
which is all
we'll
too
find
likely.
A way of doing right. It, David, don't you worry.
Mr. President, I welcome these forecasts. I think the working party's done a pretty good job for this, and I have sort of helped them a little bit in the introductory stages, but the results are all their own work. It's quite a long time since we had a discussion on CMI graduated tables. I can't remember when the last one was, though I would have been at it. I'd like to say two of my comments relate to the whole sort of CMI things, if I can make them. Some actuaries obviously think of a mortality table as a series of values of QX at integer ages. But the more modern way of looking at it is that a mortality table is a function of mu x for all values of x. And this is essential for multiple state work, which is becoming more frequent in a whole lot of fields. Though the traditional actuarial work can perfectly well be done with tables of QX. Now, the Working Party has, of course, produced tables of mu x, but the CMI hasn't done that all the way through, and this is partly my own fault in the past. The projections for the 80 and 92 series were done projecting QXs, and the medium and other cohorts are factors applied to QX, so there aren't mu x's available all the way through, which is a small fault. I think we should sort of try and revise that in future. If one's needing a table of mu x, a formula for mu x, it is important to have that formula. And I know there are the formula underlying both the OO tables and all these, but they're kind of obscure because you shift from one formula to another, there's different parameters coming in, there's little bits where you use where one uses the higher or lower of certain rates, and it's actually quite difficult, even for those of us who are used to it, to work out exactly what formula to use to replicate any table all the way through. And that is actually very useful within the computer, where you can say, my table is a small routine that calculates values, rather than my table is a set of numbers I've got to read in from a database somewhere else. A small aspect of the 92 tables was that it was possible to tinker with the parameters a bit so that one fitted the data satisfactorily in the where there was data, but that old ages and young ages, the same formula applied all the way through. And generally that has not been done here. So the old and the young ages have been, different bits have been spliced in. I think it's possible to do it with trying to fit a single formula all the way through, but I haven't actually done it yet. I'd like to make some brief comments, though, on the old ages and the young ages. I think the old age rates are, I have the feeling that they're a bit too low. And I think, although it makes hardly any difference to the annuities at younger ages, it must make some difference to the annuities values at high ages. And there would be some pension schemes that do have people of 95 or 100 in them. And it doesn't seem to me any point in overvaluing these just because the table is like that. I think one would want more evidence before saying that these rates are right. For the young ages, I think it's very important to, for practical purposes, to have a table for all pensioners down to age 20, not just for the normal health pensioners. Now, coming down to age 20 for the normal health, they have used what effectively coming down to something like the assured lives table, so that they are what would be the mortality of those who retired in normal health at young ages, if there were any such people. There may be, but not large numbers. On the other hand, there really are ill health pensioners at young ages, and there are also, presumably, some pension schemes where it's quite difficult to distinguish between ill health and normal pensioners, and one has to value them using some single table. So even if it means that the all pensioners table doesn't quite fit the data at any particular point around between 50 and 65 quite so well, I would rather see it being brought down to age 20 or possibly age 17, doesn't matter too much there. But not with a U-shape, with more or less a horizontal bit from 20 to 50 and then rising smoothly thereafter. Some of the pensioners' tables, the males' lives and the females' ones, actually do look like that pretty well. It's the important males' amounts one, where a GM04 formula has been used rather than a 1-4. And I think probably using a slightly different formula would get it to go in the right place. A small point, I should have questioned before, and should have looked up some of the answers. The committee has used weights appropriate to smoker, non-smoker, and combined from the OO series tables. And someone can, Simon Spencer's here, he can correct me. I thought the combined included the smoker and the non-smoker in any case, as well as the undifferentiated ones. So the combined by itself would have been enough. In the presentations, one thought was we saw pictures of heavy and light and all. And if on all on an amounts basis, if one uses an amounts basis, the light, who are the big pensions, get more weight. So it's not too surprising that the light and the all are pretty close together and the heavy are a bit above it. It would might be interesting to see the same thing done on a lives basis, even if they didn't become published tables. And in some of the comparisons that Nigel put forward, the light and the top bracket and the OO series showed very similar results. I wonder what would happen if you applied the OO series tables to that data. Is it actually significantly different? The graphs, it's quite difficult to pick this up, because on a graph the rates of mortality look terribly close together, and they may be quite significantly different when it comes to numerical values or monetary values, but they may also be quite well within the confidence intervals of the parameters of the confidence intervals of the graduation. The standard errors of the parameter estimates do exist, but they haven't been put into the paper, so one can't, the general public, as it were, can't readily look at those. It might be worthwhile, as a thought, just possibly putting those into the finally published version. But it's quite difficult, even if you have the standard errors of the parameters, it's quite difficult to see the effect of this on the mortality rates themselves, unless one does a technique that has been described in the past of doing simulations and looking at the mortality rates. I'm sorry that these are a lot of rather technical comments, but it's useful to get them out of the way, as well as having the comments, I hope, will come forward about what tables are needed and what shape they should be, because practitioners will know what they want.
Thank you very much, David. Martin Clark next, then.
Speaking as a guest this evening rather than a member of the Institute, and thank you very much for the invitation. The organisation we work for is the Pension Protection Fund, and I think on the basis of what we've read and seen, then we will be formally responding to the working paper that's published. I would, though, like to offer congratulations, support and encouragement to the CMI team on the progress that's been made with the analysis of pension scheme mortality data. I think it's fair to say that it's been too long the data and the tables available to the majority of schemes have been those derived from national statistics or insurance company evidence, and this has, in my opinion, been a serious deficiency. Of course, judgment's always necessary in formulating valuation assumptions, and the context in which those assumptions are made and the sensitivity of the outcome are highly relevant to the significance of the choice of any one particular parameter. However, the developments that are currently underway, that we've seen some evidence of tonight, have the potential to improve risk management and address potential imbalances in the knowledge and data within the UK pensions industry. Firstly, from my own evidence, the distribution of private sector defined benefit schemes in the UK is highly skewed. The vast majority of schemes are unlikely to have sufficient experience without some reference to standard tables on which to base the valuations. The data published by Pensions Regulator and my own organisation under our Purple brand shows that only around 250 schemes out of a total population of 7,800 have memberships in excess of 10,000, and that over a third of schemes have fewer than 100 members. So the greater accessibility of relevant tables to use for the measurement or for the benchmarking is invaluable to both advisers and indeed to trustees. Another imbalance in knowledge is that between schemes and the markets for buyout and for mortality hedges. The transfer of risk, which is, we are assured, a growing phenomena, will, between parties, will be a more even transaction if both parties are able to evaluate the cost of that risk with more relevant data on which to base decisions, rather than the deep suspicion that maybe prevails today that they are measuring the same risk but with different rulers. I'm somewhat surprised, somewhat disappointed, although I accept the explanation that's given, but that postcode data are not yet sufficiently widely available to permit such analysis, and importantly, to permit investigations into the relative effectiveness of postcode and pension amount as proxies for lifestyle when it comes to mortality experience. Indeed, it may be that the ultimate destination for us is to base all mortality predictions on postcode data, with adjustments to reflect the working or pension status of that particular individual. Having said that, I was slightly surprised that the degree of sensitivity of the experience shown in the results that we've seen to the size of pension, And I do wonder whether this disguises some heterogeneity in the underlying data rather than a genuine discriminatory factor of some significance. And as Nigel Bodie and the working papers do acknowledge, industry sector is an area for future work, and I have to say I would encourage that, because again the suspicion I have is that maybe differences in the data set, say between public sector and some elements of private sector, that would explain some of the differences that the pension amount differential actually reveals. So actuaries making adjustments to the standard tables that we've seen presented ought to be able to compare the composition of the data that they're working on, the industrial classification and the occupations, with the population that's represented the base from which the graduation was derived. I would tend to be cautious, therefore, about the proposal to graduate an ultralight version to reflect the experience of the liars with very high pension amounts, and I would certainly like to see more work and evidence on that score. Producing graduations on ill health retired is a great leap forward, and where the experience supports it, I would favour the separate graduations and possibly even the use of select tables, as far as the data will permit it. On the other hand, we must remember that definitions of ill health vary, of course, and again, this is a scheme-specific aspect, and we must be proportionate in the way we apply those factors. Finally, on the specific point about heavy and light, and my only comment about nomenclature is this is obviously a convention that was agreed by a faculty member in the pub one evening, and I can't think of anything better other than alpha and beta, but then you end up with alpha male and so on and so forth, so that's the end of my comments on that score. But on the point about heavy and light graduations of the old pensioner category, which is one of the questions, I can see uses for this. In my own organisation, we don't differentiate between ill health and normal retirements, and so that would be particularly useful. And generally, scheme data doesn't always permit that classification in any event. And on the same vein, and the previous speaker talked about extending below age 50 for the old pensioner category, and again, that's a challenge that we all have, and if it wasn't there, we would have to produce our own extension, so why not produce it as part of the graduation. So overall, therefore, there's a lot of invaluable work here and new and relevant tools for actuaries and clients to use to improve the accuracy of their values and benchmark their results. And from a regulatory perspective, if I may say so, this is to be encouraged, but as we've seen, acknowledged so far already today, perhaps the elephant in the room remains the evidence or lack of it for assumptions about future improvements in mortality. And I can only encourage the work that is being promised to measure this and track it as we go forward. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you very much, Martin. Right, who would like to be next? Yes, Richard Humble.
Thank you, President. My name is Richard Humble. I'd very much like to congratulate the authors on their valuable work and these two excellent papers. I want to concentrate on one aspect of the results they have produced. This is in relation to the widely held view that socioeconomic differences in mortality tend to zero at high ages, which I will refer to as convergence. The age 95 is often taken as the age at which socioeconomic differences disappear. A recent example of this assumption was contained in last autumn's paper presented to the Institute on Equity Release by Hosty et al. I must say that personally I've always been extremely sceptical about this particular assumption. It seems apparent that those who are wealthy have and will have, even if they're extremely elderly and mentally impaired, will have wealthier and more highly educated relatives caring for them, and that this is likely to be reflected in them receiving a better level of care and better medical treatment than, for example, those who are entirely reliant on the resources of the state. I find it extremely difficult to believe that this has absolutely no effect whatsoever on their mortality. However, some graphs of actual over expected mortality seem to support this by showing a strong convergence. But this is really because there are graphs, which is a point David Wilkie referred to, and the effect is apparent rather than real. What is really happening is that the denominator, the related to QX, increases very rapidly compared to the numerator, the difference in QXs by socioeconomic class. So it looks as if they converge. If you take the information in these two papers and look at the differences in simple death rates, i.e. QX for high pension amounts compared to QX for low pension amounts, there's no sign of this difference converging as age increases. If anything, it diverges. And this is true of both the crude death rates and the graduated rates between heavy and life in Working Paper 32. I think that this is, in some circumstances, a very important assumption, and I would urge the profession to think really quite carefully about exactly what they're assuming in this regard. Thank you.
Thank you, Richard. Right. Yes, Peter Tompkins.
President, ladies and gentlemen, just a few comments, and before doing so, can I echo the comments others have made about the great debt of gratitude we owe the various members of the working parties that have put this work together for us. It's been an interesting discussion to hear a number of people commenting on the issue that's probably, as Mr. Clark said, the elephant in the room, the big area of doubt being for us the extent to which future improvements will be seen in the data we're studying and indeed at the population at large. I, for one, do not share the criticism that has been made of this particular work not addressing that, because it's quite clear from the data that's been put up that thus far we don't have enough data over a consistent time period to enable us to look at the improvements that have been experienced. But I think the area of improvements is one that we've got to approach with a degree of humility as a profession. We've been faced with a good deal of criticism in the past for perhaps what we would all agree today is some slowness at recognising the changes that have been happening in the secular trend of improvement in health and longevity generally. But also it's extremely difficult, if not impossible, to determine future improvements from the extrapolation of recent data, even if the data supply and the data you're unable to analyse is 5 or 6 years of quality data. That's not very much in terms of us telling us what's the future going to have as we look ahead half a century in time. We've got a difficulty at the moment, if we're advising pension schemes, that this major issue is not being driven by the profession, perhaps, as much as I'd like it to see it being done. It's being driven, for example, by the regulators, the financial services regulators, encouraging insurers to make sure that the reserves they're putting up allow for sufficient improvement to give them some comfort. And by extension, that working its way backwards into the pricing and the quotations that pension schemes might be faced with if they were looking to buy out part of their benefits. The Pension Protection Fund, of course, is reserving for some improvements akin to reserving as an insurer would be, and perhaps that has some messages that may be coming through in the way in which schemes may be facing the calculations they make for that purpose. But we've got to, as a profession, I think, look very seriously at coming up with some convergence, some way of forming opinions that we can hold to about two things, I think, here. First, the improvements that we might expect to see in the population as a whole. Perhaps, President, perhaps this evening You've chosen to have the meeting at the Royal College of Surgeons because this is such an important matter, not only for our profession, but of course for the medical professions, which have been the cause of so much of what we've seen in the last decade or two. But secondly, I think there's a caution for us when we look at the self-administered pension scheme mortality, not to forget the fact that that is a population itself which is changing. It's changing with the closures and alterations in the population, which could affect conclusions that might be being made if one isn't careful about the chain linking of data from time to time and the extrapolations that you might want to make from that as to what's happening in the population as a whole. I think the profession could do us a good favour by making sure that there is plenty of opportunity in halls like this evening's to have discussion about the assumptions and the reasons for those assumptions that we're making, in order that we can perhaps collectively come to some views with some good support for them. They won't necessarily be right. In fact, that's one thing we can all be sure of, they will be wrong. But we can have at least some confidence that we've discussed them openly, and I would encourage the profession to find as many opportunities as possible to enable us to come together and share the views and the reasons for the way in which we are addressing what is probably the biggest part of the doubt which we have about the reserves and the figures that we need to be drawing up at the current time. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Peter. Right, who would like to speak next? I think we're hoping to. Oh, yes, Gordon Sharp.
Thank you, President. I have very few planned contributions, but it's really more in reaction to what's been said already. And as well as the very appropriate thanks that have already been given to the working party, we shouldn't forget certainly my predecessors on Pensions Board, who initiated this whole study in the first place. And I think it's, unless you've been involved in it, it's very difficult to realise just how hard it was to get this survey together, to pull data from so many different sources, and not least to actually pay for the data being analysed. In a disparate profession, that was very difficult. So thank you to my predecessors for that. Two things I'd like to comment on. Briefly, the naming convention, which Louise mentioned, I don't think anybody else has really responded to. It may partly be a personal comment, but I can't not have my Pensions Board hat on as well, that I'm sure everybody in this room would appreciate that if we call the tables the 08 tables, they would know that they had to project forward from 03, but of course we do have all these other actuaries out there who haven't had the benefit of this discussion, and I do wonder if we lose something by pretending that they're more up to date than they are. That's an opposite view to Louise's for discussion, and we look forward to more responses on that topic. I was also interested in the old age question and looking at the ONS data that was referred to in the paper, and not having done any particularly scientific work on it myself, but just scanning diagonally across the columns of these tables, then you do actually see that figures of round about 0.4 or 0.5 could well be derived from that. Now, that's not scientific. That's I just looked at it, and until we have more data and more experience, I suspect we're not going to get that meaningfully for another 5 or 10 years. I do find it difficult to do something more different, but at least we have been looking at something outside the scant data in our own little populations. And going forward, I think there needs to be even more discussion with, cooperation with other demographers. ONS is the appropriate place to start with the extra data sets they have. And that, too, is just as important, as Peter said, when we're talking about projections of mortality, the elephant. We've already, I think, come quite a long way in the last year with all the help I had from a separate working party to put the subject of projections much more firmly into mainstream actuarial agenda than I suspect it was. Going forward, the actuarial profession doesn't always move as quickly as other people would like, but that is a subject that the ball is already rolling on. There was a session at the faculty just a few weeks ago, mainly looking at various medical advances which will influence mortality going forward. I'm sure we will see much more interdisciplinary research on that.
Thank you very much, Gordon. Right. Who would like to make the next contribution? Yes, Derek Pike.
My name is Derek Pike, and I'm speaking in a personal capacity, not for my employer. I'd like to thank the authors tonight for all the work that they've put into this paper, and in a very thorough and professional manner. And I've just one suggestion to make. The authors have made a two-way split into light and heavy. But I think it's entirely possible that some actuaries will want a different categorization, either in terms of splitting the population they have into more than two categories, or in terms of using something intermediate. And given that the light and heavy are not parallel, I think it would be useful to have an indication of how to interpolate between light and heavy for the other bands, the five bands that the authors originally analysed. It's probably too late now, but I think I would have been interested to see a top band and a bottom band, together with a table of how to interpolate for the intermediate bands. Just a suggestion.
It would be quite useful to have some feedback from those who are going to be using these tables on how many tables they want and which particular tables they think they will use and which ones they won't use. I'm wondering if there's any possibility of sort of having almost a show of hands among practitioners on that, if no one's keen to speak. But please do come and make a contribution if you've got any views on that. It doesn't have to be especially erudite. We'd just like to have some feedback. Anyone like to give us their views? No. Okay. Well, shall we try the show of hands approach? Oh, sorry. There was one hand up. Yes, there is a hand. Very good.
My name's Tim Keogh. I'm encouraged to comment on some of the previous submissions. I think this aspect of public relations is crucially important here. One of the things, hopefully, that people interested in the subject have got their heads around, but maybe not everyone else, is the need to think both about the current experience mortality and the improvement rate. And they are different. One is something that, in principle, you could measure if you had perfect data and so on, whereas the future improvement rate is always going to be a matter of opinion. And we do ourselves no service as a profession by mixing these two together for convenience, which we do some of the time. I think, therefore, when it comes to releasing a paper like this, we have to at least nod towards the improvement area at the same time as we talk about the specifics of the current experience. It's okay to say we've got a program of work that will deal with these things on parallel tracks, and this particular document emphasizes the current experience. Maybe working paper 33 would talk about improvements, but we've got to be saying that we're dealing with both of them, at least giving that impression, even if it's not quite the case. And we've got to hint at how connections can be made. So just some work on how we could wire these new tables into some of the projections we might use would be much better, even if it's only a small amount, than saying this is nothing to do with us, Gov. And that goes on to the point on naming and PR. I think Louise Pryor was quite right that we need to have something that communicates this a bit better. I think we should actually learn from Microsoft, who gave up with Windows 95 and 98 and so on, and just call it XP and Vista. And they may be meaningless, but they do allow you to separate all of this and to build a brand. And maybe we actually need to do this. We have got some super new tables that we've made a huge investment in as a profession, and we want to continue investing. So let's just say we've now got super new tables. I haven't got the term, but let's just call them SA, and everyone thinks, well, that's quite sexy. We haven't had them before. And in 2011, you know, we need to come up with a new brand for the next version, and so be it. But then you lose the emphasis on the year and the technical thing, or at least that can be in the technical documents that no one will read. Likewise, but will be less visible to our clients. I do get to edit this before it goes in the journal. Similarly, on the light and heavy, I mean, when we're talking to our clients about these, the light is actually going to be the rich people, and the heavy is going to be the less rich, more or less. Now, whether we need to call these economy of business, or sort of blue and gold, or blue and platinum, or something like that, but again, we need to come up with a name in convention that will make it easier to explain that this is a table which goes with your bunch of employees or scheme members, and this is a table that seems more likely to fit with yours. Finally, I don't really have a strong view as to whether the top 12.5% or the top 25% is a better place to cut off, but I do think that we should have a limited number of tables that cover as wide a range as possible. Because all the experience I see of individual schemes is that the experience is genuinely wide, and the closer together the light and heavy tables are, the more it will corral people's thinking in between them. Whereas if you have a wider range, you can always interpolate in some way, but people will find it very difficult to go outside the range that's defined by the tables that are made available. So make it wide, please.
Thank you very much, Tim. Who'd like to be next? Right, well, we don't seem to have anyone who wants to be next just at the moment. So in that case, I will ask Brian Wilson to ask for to seek some feedback by show of hands, and I'll leave it up to him as to what he sees.
Yes, thank you very much. First of all, you're aware that we've got normal health, ill health, and then all, essentially, the three categories that we're looking at. If you would like us to continue with all those three, could you raise your hand, please? Thank you. If you think that three is too many and we should essentially only have one set plus ill health, because I think ill health is probably going to be there come what may. Could you put your hand up now, please? Very similar numbers.
I fear so, yes.
Thank you. Could I just check, if anybody does not think that ill health tables should be produced, put your hand up.
That's
sorted that one anyway, even if the other remains for further feedback. On the graduating at the top end, which is a very difficult process because almost all the experiences we look at show that as age goes over 100, it appears as if mortality actually lightens. I don't think anybody really believes that. They think the data is false. In having a cutoff at age 105 and then continuing at a constant rate, we are very much breaking with the tradition of previous actuarial tables, both those for the UK population and for assured lives tables. If you think that we are wrong and that we should graduate with increasing queues up to 120 rather than the approach we have adopted, could I have a show of hands, please? Thank you very much. If you rather like what we've done, albeit with a bit of tweaking, could you put your hand up, please? Thank you very much. I think that was a conclusive one as well. Thank you very much.
Good. Did you want to ask any questions about the light and heavy and what have you?
Yes, we could ask. I think this is all very useful, having shows of hands, because you get a lot more information very quickly. The top band being the top 12.5 as opposed to the top 25%, could you put your hand up if you would like the top band to be the top 12.5? If you show now, please. Thank you. If you would prefer to remain the top 25%, could you have a show of hands? Yes, somewhat fewer, I think. So that certainly points us in one direction. There is an allied question which we haven't asked, which has come up because of the one or two other comments. The heavy we've actually taken is the bottom 75%. We could use the bottom 50% or even a smaller bottom tranche in order to widen the difference between light and heavy. If you would like us to explore that further, could I have a show of hands?
Oh.
Thank you. If you're happy with what we've done, could I have a show of hands? Right, I think we've got some more. I landed us in it there, Committee, I'm afraid. Those who think that all tables should continue down to age 20 or lower, a show of hands, please. Thank you. Those that were happy for the table of all pensioners to stop at 50, which is the alternative for those, show of hands, please. Thank you. And then David Wilkie actually, I think, wanted all tables to go down to a lower age. There is an option of considering the ill health and the normal health as a pair, and then the all pensioners separately, but of course that does then mean you've got the ill health pensioners having to be put into a single table with the others. If you think the normal health should stop at 50, could I have a show of hands? And those would like the normal health continue down to 20, even though there won't be any normal health pensioners there, but it might be used for other purposes. Show of hands, please. Yes, thank you very much.
Very good. Has that given you some useful feedback?
It's given us a lot more work to do.
And some extra work.
Yes.
See that. Okay. Who else would like to make a contribution? Would any of... Oh, yes. David Wilkie wants a second go.
With your permission, Mr. President, David Wilkie again, I'd like to ask Mr. Clark whether, when he was talking about postcodes, he was meaning looking at it broadly by region, which you would get from the first two letters of the postcode, or whether he was thinking of going down to the micro level in what used to be called MIDAS or Mosaic, something, I've forgotten the name, Mosaic coding, which goes... right down to trying to classify small districts or separate postcodes as being affluent or deprived or somewhere in between. There's two quite different approaches there. One is a regional one and one's trying to get a social class one. To do the latter, you do need to make sure you've got accurate postcodes on the data, which is not always very easy.
Would you like to come and respond?
Yes, thank you for the question, for clarification. I think what intrigues me is the potential to use a greater data set in order to rate and value mortality experience. And certainly I was referring to the quite granular detail that is available in certain quarters. And in the context of the comments about Microsoft et al, Mosaic has certainly been a forerunner, but is not necessarily the ultimate in terms of the current standards in terms of linking postcode data with the kind of lifestyle information that's available from nationally available sources that many of the companies who specialise in this area can build that bridge from the basic postcode through to more detail on aspects of people's lives. So was in particular thinking about the extremely granular approach. And I know in the past that some surveys or some analyses have been done on broader brush and comparing that with using pension amount as being a discriminator and not been terribly conclusive, but do feel that a more granular approach is potentially a better basis for getting the discrimination that the pension amount actually does. In particular, I mean, with fragmented working lives, I think it's increasingly difficult to see that an accumulation of pension within one particular scheme is going to necessarily be a big discriminator of the lifestyle experienced by that individual. So that was what was in my thinking. The rejoinder is, yes, but we don't have the information. And I think that's another aspect in terms of the journey that pension schemes within the UK are on. And that is that this is information where we ought to be encouraging either as a profession or through our relationships with the other parties involved in pension scheme administration and trusteeship to make sure that information of this nature is actually readily available. I mean, without being too controversial about it, we do a lot of transfer and transition work at the organisation I work for, and one of the handicaps there is getting accurate and complete data on which to make sure that we pay the right people the right amount at the right time, and postcode information is one element of that. So I think if we can be on a journey where we are getting the right data and could administer schemes to a high degree of accuracy and trusteeship, then we'll benefit also by being able to get a more relevant and accurate and informative view in terms of our analysis of the data.
Thank you very much, Martin. Right, this is your last chance then to make a contribution to the discussion. Anyone else like to speak? Any of our other guests like to say anything? No, it looks as though that's it. So in that case, can I please ask Paul Jason to close the discussion?
Not there, or is
it? I think you should go there, Paul.
Thank you. I left the flyer for this event on my coffee table last week, and my wife just happened to pick it up, and she was reading through it and saw the comment that said, "This is the moment that pensions actuaries have been waiting for." And she asked me, what could that possibly be? Is this some new sort of pension scheme that's going to be around to keep us all in jobs for the next 50 years? And I said, no, it's dealing with the analysis of data that's been done on deaths of members of self-administered pension schemes. So she sort of gave me a rather quizzical look and asked me how this could possibly be described as the moment that pensions actuaries have been waiting for. But I found myself arguing with her. And I said that this is actually a very exciting and important topic. I couldn't believe that I actually used the word exciting. But she just shrugged her shoulders and walked off muttering about something about me needing to get out more. She just doesn't understand, obviously. But mortality is clearly becoming an ever more important area of the work of a pensions actuary. Gone are the days when the only thought that we gave to the table of mortality to use in preparing a valuation was whether we should move from A55 to PA90 and perhaps rate down the table by a year or so because of a general consensus that perhaps people might be living longer. That does seem a long time ago now. And of course, mortality mattered much less in those days when interest rates and inflation rates were higher. But as they've come down, the individual elements of the valuation basis have been peeled back and are now much more visible. Coupled with that are the accusations that actuaries have been understating mortality in their funding assessments for years. As the assumptions for longevity have been strengthened, there have been big jumps in contribution rates and requirements from scheme sponsors. And as actuaries, we're fair game. We've heard concerns about public perception in the naming convention this evening, and I certainly feel exposed as an actuary to what the public think of me. I'm not going to consider whether or not we have been caught on the hop as a profession in not forecasting the unprecedented increases in longevity over the last few years, or even recognising the trends earlier, although I do often feel like I'm being accused of having had a dodgy crystal ball when talking to clients about strengthening mortality assumptions. I also have to confess that as a scheme actuary and as a consultant, I'm not really too interested in the graduation methods that are adopted and the other techie stuff that my colleagues on the dark side get up to. I just want the tools to present compelling arguments and reasoning to clients about the assumptions to use in their valuations and the other financial assessments in the light of the increasing focus being given by trustees and sponsors on the risk that they're being run in their schemes. There's plenty of theory that I can fall back on in coming up with financial assumptions, but until recently there was very little to back up the mortality side, which, as I said, is critical in a financial assessment of a scheme and imposes huge risks on scheme sponsors. We also heard from our guest at the PPF how important this issue is from a risk management point of view from their perspective. So that's why I'm especially grateful for the work that's being carried out by the CMI on this, and I hope that we can all support the committee by providing the data that they're asking so that they can extend their studies. The advice that I and other pensions actuaries have given to clients recently on mortality assumptions is much more robust than it ever was. On the other hand, we've realised that the data available really doesn't match the population of lives that we're considering in our schemes, which is why the arrival of tables specific to self-administered schemes, sliced and diced for different circumstances, is indeed an important development. And this work's evolving, for example, in analysing the effect of industry sector and mortality improvements. As I said, I don't consider myself an expert on mortality. It's been many years since I studied for it and the exams, and I'm totally reliant on others to help me on this. And yet I'm being told by the regulator and the profession that I need to carefully consider the mortality assumptions that I advise on. Clients just want me to use the latest tables. I get that quite often. The regulator tells me that I need to pay particular attention to the assumptions about future mortality, and that it might be appropriate to adjust standard tables to reflect scheme, employer, and geographic factors where evidence exists to support this. But no one's really telling me what to do or how to do it. The Board for Actuarial Standards, I understand, is shortly to issue a discussion paper on the type of guidance that should be given on mortality advice across all disciplines. But I think this is likely to take some time to get any guidance. And when we do, is it likely to be any more than just broad principles, which is the way that the regulation and the guidance is going? That's why I believe that we need to be very grateful for the work that's been presented to us today. Not only does it give us a better understanding of the subject and the issues that we need to take into account in our advice, but also it gives us the tools to advise our clients on this complex issue. That's not to say that there won't be some tricky issues coming out of all of this. One of these might be how the regulator will view the use of SAPS tables in forthcoming valuations, where they serve to bring down the value of a scheme's liabilities. And we'll no doubt be getting into some interesting discussions over the coming months, perhaps with some offsetting of the releasing of reserves against allowances for future improvements. And how much more help can we give our clients in negotiating on buyout costs with insurers whose mortality bases are very closely guarded secrets? So all in all, I think we've got much to thank this working party for, and I for one have found that this session hasn't let me down in being a moment that we've been waiting for. Just to say I'm not totally sad, I will be going to the pub for a drink after this. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Paul. And I'd now like to ask Brian Wilson to respond on behalf of the presenters.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much indeed for all your comments this evening by the speakers. I assure you that the committee will take them very much on board. I think the show of hands was a very useful device, and thank you for suggesting that, President. I certainly think that responding to some of the individual points, that Richard Humble's point about looking at the convergence at high ages is something we probably ought to have another look at before we finalise what we do there, and so we will be doing that. I agree with everything that Peter Tompkins said on mortality projections, even though that is not the subject of the paper. I agree that we do need to come to some collective mind on it as a profession in order to maintain the profession's sort of responsibilities in this area rather than trying to duck out. And I know that further work is in hand on that. Gordon Sharp mentioned the medical side of things and the faculty meeting. And again, that is, I think, largely to do with improvements. And I'm sure that will be taken into account in the work under consideration. I was very interested in Tim Keogh's suggestion of having blue and platinum. I can see that that course could cause confusion among some elderly ladies, though. The use of the nomenclature 03 is something that clearly we need to consider before finalising the tables. Thank you for the input on that. I'm not quite sure if you'll get XP or Vista, or if we can trump Microsoft by getting their next one before them. David Wilkie's comments on trying to get a single graduation formula across all of ages is something that I think we should aspire to. Whether we will get there, I don't know. All I can say is that I know that the OO table producers didn't manage it, and so we would be doing quite well if we can. We might indeed be calling on David to give us some assistance there. Postcoding is something that we are going to start looking at once we've got sufficient data. It will be some while yet before we do have enough data to look at that. My main concern about it is the very high number of deaths that we're likely to get in postcodes of hospitals. So you have the exposed to risk living forever and all the deaths at the hospital sites. We need some way to solve that equation. I know that life offices claim to have managed it, so I think on delving more deeply, we will perhaps investigate whether they are just saying they've done it, whether they really have done it. And I think I agree with Paul that the work is exciting from time to time. Thank you very much, Chairman. President.
Very good. Thank you very much, Brian. Well, that's probably enough excitement for one evening then. So it just remains for me to express my thanks, and I'm sure the thanks of all of us, to our presenters, to the closer, and to all of those who participated in this evening's discussion. But as Gordon Sharp said, there have been a lot of other people involved in getting us to this important milestone of having some graduated tables for self-administered pension scheme members. I think we ought to thank all of those at the CMI, those who have been involved in providing data, those on the pensions board who kicked the whole thing off, and so on. So can we please show our appreciation to all of those people? Thank you very much. Right, now, as usual, it would be helpful for those preparing the transcript of the discussion for the British Actuarial Journal if you could hand any prepared notes to Pauline Simpson or Maria Lyons at the back of the hall as you leave the meeting. And just before we finish, the next sessional meeting of the Institute of Actuaries will be back in Staple Inn at 5 o'clock on Monday the 25th of February, when a discussion on applying survivor models to pensioner data will take place. More mortality, more excitement. There you are. I'm afraid there are no drinks this evening. It was just going to be too expensive because of the location. But I declare the meeting closed.